Morning will be in Genesis chapter 50, the culmination of we've been on this over a year, I think, now. But see, these journeys, it seems like when you start and you look from Genesis 1 to Genesis 50, you say, my gracious, that's going to be a long journey. But then when you get to Genesis and look back, it seems like that wasn't very long at all. It's like I'm almost disappointed that there's not more in, it's time to move to something else. We're going to be in Genesis 50 today. We're going to wrap up this thing and then move on. Verse 1, and Joseph fell upon his father's face and wept upon him and kissed him. And Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father, and the physicians embalmed Israel. And 40 days were fulfilled for him, for so are fulfilled the days of those which are embalmed. And the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. And when the days of his mourning were past, Joseph spoke to the house of Pharaoh, saying, if now I have found grace in your eyes, speak, I pray you, in the ears of Pharaoh, saying, my father made me swear, saying, lo, I die. In my grave, which I have digged for me in the land of Canaan, thou shalt bury me. Now therefore, let me go up, I pray thee, and bury my father, and I will come again. And Pharaoh said, go up and bury thy father according as he made you swear. And Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him went up all the servants of Pharaoh and the elders of the house and the elders of the land of Egypt and all the house of Joseph and his brethren, his father's house. Only their little ones and their flocks and their herds they left in the land of Goshen. And there went up with him both chariots and horsemen, and it was a very great company. And they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond Jordan, and there they mourned with a great and very sore lamentation, and he made a mourning for his father 7 days. And when the inhabitants of the land and the Canaanites saw the mourning at the floor of Atad, they said, this is a grievous mourning to the Egyptians. Wherefore the name of it was called Abez Mizraim, which is beyond Jordan. And his sons did unto him according as his father commanded them. For his sons carried him into the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave in the field of Machpelah, which Abraham bought with the field for a possession of a burying place from Ephraim the Hittite before Mamre. And Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brethren, and all that went up with him to bury his father after he had buried his father. And when Joseph's brethren saw that their father was dead, they said, Joseph will peradventure hate us and will certainly requite us all the evil which we did to him. And they sent a messenger to Joseph, saying, thy father did command before he died, saying, so shall ye say to Joseph, forgive, I pray thee now, the trespass of thy brethren and their sin, for they did unto thee evil. And now we pray thee, forgive the trespass of the servants of thy servants of the God of thy father. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. And his brethren also went and fell down before his face, and they said, behold, we be thy servants. And Joseph said unto them, fear not, for I am in the place of God. But as for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it against me, you thought evil against me, but the God meant it good to be good, to bring to pass as it is this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore, fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. And Joseph dwelt in Egypt and in his father's house, and Joseph lived 110 years. And Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation, the children also of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were brought up upon Joseph's knees. And Joseph said to his brethren, I die, and God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land which he sware to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And Joseph took an oath of the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from hence. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. Boy, there's a lot of good stuff in here. I'm going to sit down, and we're going to talk about it. Joseph fell upon his father's face and wept over him and kissed him. What's that saying? It was intimacy with his father. He was speaking of his natural father. It's grief. It's a natural process to grieve when we lose someone dear to us. It's a natural process. So what's it telling you? That Joseph, although he was a type of Christ, had his flesh to deal with, didn't he? Just as Jesus, when he walked on the earth, he had to deal. He was tested in all ways as we are, correct? He had to have the same testing. If he never had to walk through what we walk through, how could he say he's walked through it? It doesn't work any other way. Huh? It would make him a liar if he hadn't lived all the things, expressed the things that we have. And Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father. And the physicians embalmed who? If you will notice in this chapter, Jacob's name is never mentioned. Now tell me why it's never mentioned. Yeah, but look what happened in his life. At the end of his life, he finally come to fulfillment of what God prophesied. Like, your name will no longer be Jacob, but it will be Israel. It will be. He didn't say it is right now, but it will be. And by the end of his life, God's prophecy to him, his word to him, come to pass, didn't it? God never referred to him as Jacob in this last chapter. And by the end of her life, remember Jesus said, he that endures to the end, the same shall be delivered. Guess what? Jacob was just delivered. True or false? See? It's a process. And see, we're not going to be totally delivered of everything until the moment we step through from this flesh veil into the kingdom, into the fullness of the kingdom. It's a process we go through. It's okay. Okay? It's okay to go through this thing. It's what God has set up for us. And 40 days were fulfilled for him. And what is 40? It's his testing. See, his testings were fulfilled. And although they're using that 40 in there for the days of embalming, you know, that means nothing to him. He's finished. He's completed his journey, which were embalmed. And the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. And remember what it said to Adam in Genesis 6? Your days will be 70. That Adam's time was finished there, wasn't it? Just another witness of it. And when the days of his mourning were past, Joseph spoke to the house of Pharaoh, saying, if now I have found grace in your eyes, speak now, not I pray you, but speak now in the ears of Pharaoh, saying, my father made me swear, saying, lo, I die, if in my grave which I have digged in for me in the land of Canaan, you shall bury me. Now therefore, let me go up, I pray you, and bury my father, and I will return. Now he said, I want to bury my father, this flesh. Where do you want to bury him? Land of Canaan. What is Canaan? Lowland. I want to bury him here. Because you know what? This flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom. I'm going to put it back to the dust where it belongs, and the spirit's going to return to God who gave it. Ecclesiastes 12, right? Beautiful patterns and all this stuff. Pharaoh said, go up, bury your father, according as he has made you swear. And Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him went up all the servants of Pharaoh, and the old of his house, and all the old of the land of Egypt, all the mature people. Children don't do good at funerals. There's a lot of things to them. Now, I don't see making children go set it, but they're going to experience it sooner or later. But little children don't need the trauma of that, you know. And all the house of Joseph and his brethren, his father's house, only their little ones and their flocks and their herds they left in the land of Goshen, the land of drawing near, okay? And there went up with him both chariots and horsemen, and it was a very, what? Numerous body of people, lots of people. And they came to the threshing floor of Atad. My goodness, now we're going to find out something. Where did they stop at? What's the threshing floor represent? Place of separation, place of testing and trials. So you're going to beat that wheat out of you. Sometimes you think God is beating something out of you when you're walking through these tests. And he said to the floor of Atad. Does anybody know what Atad means? Well, it speaks of thorn, but if you look a little closer to the front of that understanding, what's it say? A little farther, closer to the front of it. Very first part of the word, what's it say? Read it out loud to me. Atad. What's it say? The meaning of the word. No. You're bleeding over a word. Just a second. You're in the wrong place. Flip it back over. There. What's it read? Now read it what it says. meaning to pierce. That's the first meaning for it. Meaning to pierce. Wonder what that might be. At the crucifixion, you betcha. See? They come to the place of crucifixion, place of separation. The cross is the place that will separate you. See? Why do you think everybody rejects so hard the message of this word, of crucifixion, of separation, of dying? See, they're trying to hold on to their self. And that's what this message is about. They came to the place of the cross, and that's what this is all representing, to a place of piercing. And they pierced him there, didn't they? Which is beyond, or literally, let me get this in my mind again, where I'm at. Which is across from, across the Jordan, okay? Across the Jordan, okay? Which is death. Now, let me go back to this atad again, because there's a root word in here, which we say it speaks of the piercing or the crucifixion, okay? Can you see what I'm talking about there? But there's two meanings to this word, two other meanings to this word. And one is, in the Egyptians call this the house of mourning. What would the Egyptians represent? Flesh, living in bondage. But the Jewish have a meaning for this, and guess what it means? The house of festival. For the joy that was set before him. Oh my God. See, when you understand the cross is not death, but it's life. This is the point of life. And it doesn't come till the flesh dies. Now we step into life. And it doesn't mean necessarily my physical body has to die. It's my fleshly thinking dies. Oh, geez. Come on, help me. And there they what? They pulled their hair and beat their breasts. Got a little emotional there, didn't they? Got into the emotions. With a great and very sore lamentation, and he made a mourning for his father 7 days. And what does seven represent? Something else. They say they seven themselves. There you go. Covenant. There was the covenant made, see? He made the covenant with the cross, didn't he? What changed the old covenant to the new covenant? Without the testator dying, there is no testament, no covenant, right? Oh, this is beautiful stuff. Oh. Thank you, Father, for showing us the truth. And when the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, the people of low degree from the lowland, the fleshly people, saw the mourning in the floor of Atad, they said, this is a grievous mourning for the Egyptians. Wherefore the name of it was called Abez Mizarim. Uh-huh, and what's that mean? That's the house of mourning, the one the Egyptians had. But then they later named it another name. I can't say the name right now. It's Beth Haglag or something like that. It is another name. It's got three names. It changed three times. And the Jews put it back to his festival. Yeah. House of his festival. Okay. Beg pardon? Yeah, can't see the word. Abel Mizraim, which is beyond or across what? You cross what? Death. When you cross death, see, when you're crossing death, there's where the mourning is. But when you get on the other side, what's it turn into? The house of his festival. Yeah. M-O-R, not M-O-U-R. Right. It turns into the mourning. Correct. I like that, Steve. And his sons did to him according as he commanded them, because his sons carried him into the land of Canaan and buried him in a cave in the field of Machpelah. And what is Machpelah? What is it? I can't hear you. Sepulcher? I'm still not getting it. Well, the meaning I've dug out is fold together or double, fold together, Machpelah. excuse me. So this is where he's folded together. What's he being folded together with? Dust to dust and ashes to ashes. He's been put in the dirt, but his spirit returns to God who gave it. Okay? Which Abraham bought with the field for a possession of a burying place from Ephron, okay, the Hittite, which speaks of fear, from Mamre, the Amorite, speaking of pride. And see, I don't want to get deep in this thing about burying and embalming and all this stuff, but I don't see anything good out of it. The only thing I see is the embalmers getting richer and people taking advantage of people in a time of weakness and mourning when they're really emotional and drilling them for every dollar they can get them for. And when Lois's dad died, I'm not going to say the name of the funeral director that did it, but we all went in and sat down. Her mother was with us, and we were trying to do things. And she was very emotional and didn't know what to thank most of the time, you know. So everybody was there to encourage her. And this director says, we need 3 or 4 copies of the death certificate, and I got you a good price on them, just $2.50. He said, I saved you $2.50. Well, you know, you'd think, well, $250, no, $2.50. He was down doing the pennies, nickels, and dimes. And then, you know, with doing a funeral of $8,000 or $10,000 and then talking about $2.50. I mean, see, they're like acting like you're all morons and they're the only ones that's intelligent in the whole world, and they take advantage of you and don't like it, you know. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Right. They bury him immediately, same day, within 24 hours. And cremation is also part of the Bible, too. I mean, it calls it the burning of the bodies, but you can look at the language, it says cremation. It says it in 4 or 5 places. Into the next realm. See, that's where it came from, the Egyptians. The Egyptians tried to preserve the kings, and then they found out if we preserve everybody, we can make more money. Oh, that's an idea. That's an original thought, huh? Make more money. Okay. And Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brethren, and all that went up with him to bury his father after he had buried his father. And when Joseph's brethren saw that their father was dead, they said, Joseph will perhaps persecute us and will certainly return to us all the evil which we did to him. Tell me what was in their mind. Guilt. Guilt. They were scared now. Dad's gone. He's been our shield. What are we going to do? See, but that's the way the world will see you. They will never see you in the perfected form. They will always see you the eyes of the natural. If people see me, they just think I'm the same Dave that they knew 25, 30 years ago. Uh-uh. New creation. I'm a new creation. Yes, it does. See, as soon as someone's dead, they figure, oh, now they're going to pay. Somebody's going to get me now, you know. But the whole thing is, we're an... Huh? That's it. He'll take it all. But see, all it is, it's fulfilling something that God said. And I'll show you in a minute. But anyway, they were filled with guilt. And they sent a messenger to Joseph saying, thy father did command before he died, saying, so shall you say to Joseph, forgive, I pray you now, the trespass or the transgression of your brethren and their offense, because they did to you evil. Now we pray you forgive the trespass or the transgression of thy servants, of the Elohim of thy father. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Now, tell me what they just did. Verse 16 and 17, what did they do? No, they lied. They lied. They said, our father said this, our father didn't say it. They made it up to try to protect themselves out of fear. And fear will create all kinds of things in you. It'll cause you to do lying, stealing, doing anything you can imagine. Fear will do that to you if you let fear manifest itself in you. Yeah. And what was the prophecy of Genesis 37? What was the vision that Joseph had? That they would all bow before him, correct? And I think they're fulfilling a vision, aren't they? Mm-hmm. So, in this it says, and in verse 18, his brethren also went and fell down before him, and they said, behold, we are your servants. They are bowing down and saying, your prophecy is being fulfilled. We are bowing before, all of our sheaves are bowing before you. Our stars are bowing before you. And there's 11 of them now, not 10. Now there is 11. Now, think of another verse in the Revelation that matches this. Huh? 3:9, absolutely. Revelation 3:9, he says, there are some who say they're Jews, but they do lie. They're of the synagogue of Satan. That means they're yet carnal. And guess what? He said, I will make them come and bow before your feet so you will know, so they will know that I love you. Now, that's not in the hereafter, I'm going to tell you, because God's not into that. But in your lifetime, people will come back to you and give you honor and respect because you have lived a godly life. And it may be at the end of your life before you get it, but you will get it because God said you will get it. You hear me? Before this life on this earth is gone, you will have respect of men because God said you would. Okay? I don't care how they treat you before here and there, but before it's over with, they're going to come back and give you honor and respect in your last days. Yep. Yep. That's the pattern. So looky here. Verse 19. And Joseph said to them, fear not, because I am I in the place of God? Now, question mark really isn't there. That Hebrew don't have any punctuation marks. And I can see where they got it. You know, am I in the place of God? But the word am isn't there. Because I in the place of God, I'm in the place of God. Now, so you can see it in a negative way. See, I'm not in the place of God. He's still denying that he's what? A son of God. I see it in another angle. He says, because I'm in the place of God. I am standing in the same place God stands in my understanding. I have the mind of Christ. So how could I judge you in any way? Why would you be afraid of me? You hear what I'm saying? I'm going to look at it as a positive aspect. I'm not looking at the negative like I'm not the son. I am standing in the place of God. Am I not? See, we are standing in this place of God when we are obedient and follow through with what he says. And so why should I have any fear of stating that fact except people don't like to hear it? What was it? Didn't Paul write in Philippians, in one of the epistles there, he said, Jesus thought it not robbery to consider himself equal with God. Okay? So if he thought himself equal with God and he's my brother, what's that make us? See? There's no problem with that. That's not being disrespectful, blasphemous in any way. That is, my friend, confidence that'll mature you in God. As long as you think you're less than God, then you'll always be looking up instead of looking within you where it all is. It's all going on inside of us. You got to quit looking up to something. See? Right? He's saying, I'm no better than you are. I'm just a chosen vessel. That's all. See? And that's what Jesus kept saying. Don't worship me. Worship God. I'm just a brethren like you. See? And we got to see ourselves that way. If we can't see ourselves through the eyes of God, we'll never fulfill our function in this life. And God's already said we're going to, so guess what we're going to do? We're going to get her done. Okay? Okay, where to leave off? 20. But as for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good to bring to pass as it is this day to sustain, not to save, but to sustain many people alive. Now therefore, fear ye not, or just fear not, the word ye shouldn't be there. I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spoke what? No. The word kindly is the Hebrew word lave, L-A-B-E. Heart. He spoke his heart to them. Hello. Does that change anything? See? He spoke his heart. What do you think he spoke? He spoke truth to them. He spoke the word of God to them. He spoke life into them. My word is life. See? Something else I want to mention before I go any further, because you'll not see one more time that God is mentioned in here, that God is mentioned in here. But something I want to bring your attention to about this chapter before I finish it. In this 50th chapter, God is only mentioned as Elohim. Only Elohim. This is the culmination of something. And in the culmination of these two great men's lives, Jacob, Israel, and Joseph, in the culmination of them, God only sees one thing. He saw them in their perfection. A finished deal. Man, this is beautiful. God sees us in that perfection. It's not just somebody saying that, but God chose to use the word Elohim. Elohim is the plurality of God. That's not God sitting up in heaven and all of us bundled up down here. Because a head and a body must be attached before there's life. Is that true? So he's saying, hey, we're one. And that's why I can boldly say, this is my gospel. That's why I can say I don't consider it anything bad to be consider myself equal with God. Because I am part of God. And where he is, I am. He saw the Elohim, the plurality of God, brought into the oneness that we're talking about right here. See, he saw that perfected picture. And that's why Elohim is chosen for this place, not Yahweh or all the other little names that are mentioned about him. No, not the character. This is him. This is the totality of God. And the totality of God is not just the Spirit of God, but it's the many-membered body. It's all the brethren put together when it comes. And isn't that what the Feast of Tabernacles is all about? Oneness, bringing it all together. And it don't mean we're all in one room. It just means we're all in one accord. Right up here in our thinking process. We put on the mind of Christ, we're in one accord with God. Oh, I love this book. And Joseph dwelt in Egypt and his father's house. And Joseph lived 110 years. Tell me about that 110 years. 100 has a meaning. Completion. Completion. Completion of the law. Exactly what it is. And see, he lived there to fulfill the law. Just as Jesus became flesh and dwelt among us, he fulfilled the law, Matthew 5:17. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill the law. And there it is. He come to fulfill it. Oh, it's beautiful. And Joseph saw Ephraim. And you know, what is it? Double fruit? He saw the double fruit, the children in the third generation. Well, he's got to get that in there somewhere, don't he? In the third day, there's perfection, isn't there? The children of Machir, and that's the ones that sold upon Manasseh, the causing to forget, were brought up on Joseph's knees. So he got to raise his grandchildren, didn't he? Great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren. And Joseph said to his brethren, I'm going to die. Didn't Jesus say it's not yet my time? But he knew when it was his time, didn't he? And he told them, I got to go to Jerusalem and be lifted up. Isn't that the same thing he's saying here? I got to die, boys. It's over. I've completed my journey. And Elohim will surely visit you and will bring you out of this land to the land which he swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. There's a beautiful promise. He promised him what land? Canaan land. The land that flows with what? Milk and honey. The word milk and the revelation of it, the honey. He said, I'm going to promise you, I'm going to take you to a place where you understand what I'm talking about. We're going to be able to have a relationship. We're going to be intimate with each other. See, that's a promise of God. There's the promises of God people don't pay attention to because they don't hear what the Spirit's saying in these things. They're just reading letters off a page, and there's no life in that. No life whatsoever. So he said, he's going to bring you to the land he promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Joseph took an oath of the children of Israel, saying, Elohim will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, in completion of the law. And they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. You know what? His flesh didn't go to the kingdom, did it? No flesh and blood shall enter the kingdom of God. I'm going to tell you, I don't know how much anyone has learned from this teaching of Genesis, but I have learned a lot. I have learned a lot. It's a process. And I know the two hardest things in this book is Genesis and Revelation to understand. And I don't care how smart anybody is, you can't understand this until God opens it up to you. It has nothing to do with being intellectual, having college degrees, but it does have everything to be with being intimate with God. And I am truly humbled at the things he showed me. And the two books that most people shy away from or try to do with ignorance is Genesis and Revelation. If you don't know the beginning and the ending, you don't know nothing in between. And he is the Alpha and Omega, isn't he? The beginning and the ending. If I don't know those two, I don't know anything. And I hope I've helped enlighten you in some of this. And our next one, we'll go into Matthew. I said we'll do some teaching in Matthew for a little bit, and then we'll go on from there. Any comments, questions?